50208 Media.
And now, on with the show.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome to Film Fracas. It's our last episode of the season. Yeah.
Woo! We made it.
Very exciting.
Woo!
So we have an expedited episode.
Yeah, Phoenix has to get out of here quickly.
It's like 24. There's a little clock counting down in the bottom corner of the screen.
Doot. Yeah.
It just goes the whole... I don't get to talk for the whole episode because I'm too busy.
But we're going to get straight to the point. Yeah. This is our Best Picture episode.
Yeah, we got three movies left. We got Les Miserables.
Same four hosts. We're all here.
Yeah. Carter Spilliards, Shannon Widener, Phoenix Arola, myself, Robbie DeShazer. We got three movies, Les Miserables, Hairspray, and The Music Man.
Yep.
They all fought hard to get here. They all deserve to be here.
Absolutely.
What a day.
I know.
What a day.
Yeah. What a momentous time.
A marathon of podcasts for us as well.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I figured we would talk about these movies, take a quick break, and then come back. And if Phoenix just needs to drop his rankings and get the hell out of here,
yeah,
we can.
I can do that.
But we'll see how much time we got. Mm-hmm. We're a minute in, so I think we're going to be fine.
Maybe.
All right. Carter, just tell us about Les Mis. Tell us how great it is.
Just
wow.
Give it to us.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You ranked it number one every episode. We can't.
What if it's my number three this week?
That would be incredible.
Not. But I love Les Mis. I think it's, honest to God, like, put aside the musical, I think it's just a good film. I think it's a stirring drama. It's epic. It is, you know, I think all of the performances are on point. I mean, look. Set aside Russell Crowe's musical ability.
Mm-hmm.
His acting performance is, I think, very good. I think he makes a very good Javert. He's intimidating. He's like, he's gruff. You know, I think he's good at the role. You know, set aside the singing voice, and it's, you know, everyone I think is acting their ass off. This is very clearly, you know, a very elaborate film. Everything putting into it. I love the cinematography. It's very dynamic for something that could have been not as exciting. It could have been played fairly straight.
Well, I mean, you have to note that, like, the difference between a miniseries that does all of the Victor Hugo novel,
yeah,
as opposed to any production of the musical.
Yeah.
They trim a lot of,
mm-hmm,
I wouldn't call it fat, because the whole novel is
a lot of the detail.
Yeah. A lot of the detail, some characters, some, you know, stuff is condensed for sure.
Definitely.
By the way, has anyone seen the BBC version that they did about a year ago?
I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, very good, very sad, with Lily Collins, I believe, mm-hmm, is Fontaine.
Yeah, Phil Collins' daughter.
Mm-hmm.
If he saw her drowning, he would probably save her.
Yeah.
I think so.
But I just, you know, we've already talked a lot about these. The thing with Les Mis is that it's probably my, y'all will find out in a couple weeks. We'll have a Best of the Decade List episode coming up. But just a little teaser there. But Les Mis is one of my favorite musicals of the decade.
Not your favorite musical.
Not my favorite, but one of my favorites.
That's the greatest show.
yeah.
We haven't seen Cats yet.
We
haven't seen Cats yet.
But it's, it's done on such a grand scale, that I feel like they really went for it and kind of utilized their resources to the best of their ability. I actually really like Tom Hooper's direction in it. And like I said, I think obviously the writing, the lyrics and everything are very good. The costumes, the performances, it's one of those things where it captures a particular magic to me. And every time I watch it, I get chills. Like it hits me every time. I feel the emotion. I mean, especially with Anne Hathaway. And it was one of those movies that made me, you know, maybe think, I was like, wow, Hugh Jackman's actually really good in this. Like, Hugh Jackman's just astonishing. And it's like, because you know he can do musicals and stuff, but this has such a dramatic element to it, and he's really playing it up. And I just love it.
Yeah. I think looking at, you know, this movie's version of Les Mis, I think I agree that, like, Hugh Jackman's performance is really well done. I think he makes a great Jean Valjean, aside from maybe some of the singing parts of it. But even then, I don't think it's, like, you know, terribly, terribly weak. I think Jean Valjean's fine. I think, in particular, Samantha Barks and Anne Hathaway, like, really steal, yeah. like, in terms of my favorite acting performances in this movie, Anne Hathaway and Samantha Barks are, like...
Also, just because Eponine gets short into the stick the entire movie.
Yeah.
And then dies.
Yeah.
She's like, she keeps taking L's and then dies.
Yeah.
And it's like...
It's upsetting.
Maybe the most tragic character.
Yeah. Sacha Baron Cohen also pretty good in this, too.
I would say...
Yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen's also very good.
An inspired pick for Denardier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also think Tom Hoover's direction in this is, I think, polarizing between person to person. I'm one that does enjoy it. I like the cinematography in this. Mm-hmm. I recognize that in certain sequences, I think, and we touched on this like the first episode or something, but like some editing choices are not great. Though Robbie's is more with the opening number, though mine's kind of more towards like the middle of the movie, where there's some really strange editing choices.
No, I would agree that those we just talked about it in that opening numbers episode.
Yeah, which is not great, but I do think overall the look of the movie is really, really great. I love a lot of the close-ups.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think we talked about, I don't know if we ever talked about it on this. I know we talked about it off mic.
Yeah.
But the close-ups and yeah.
Yeah, like, it really captures the emotion of them. It gives it like kind of a dynamic, kind of epic look to it. It's an inspired choice, I think. Like it could have been easily like staged more theatrically, more like wide and backed out. But I think, you know, pushing it in kind of gives it a more like adds more stakes to it. It makes it feel more personal and stuff. Yeah.
There are a few times where I'm like, wow, that's a lot of Dutch angles. But
yeah, there's some weird ones. There's a particularly weird one later on in the movie where it looks like the house is like sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, why?
And you're like, why are we doing this?
Just like extremely aggressive.
This one didn't need it.
I was like, I don't dislike it, but there are some things where I'm looking, I'm like, okay.
It's a lot of stylization just to remind us that this is a movie.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes with my editing thing where like, I think there are shots that could have been replaced with other shots.
Yeah.
And I also think there are some cuts that are like not that smooth of cuts. But overall, you know, I think, I mean, again, it's the music and the score and is incredible in this. The story's, you know, really touching, really moving. It's a suitable, satisfying Les Mis adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'll talk about the things I like about it first. I think a lot of the casting is inspired.
Yes.
I already touched on Sacha Baron Cohen is a great choice for Thénardier. I don't know any other actor working today who is maybe a better choice for that role. Helena Bonham Carter is fine.
Mileage varies. I think she does a good job, but yeah, it's not a role that was made for her kind of thing.
Yeah. It's not even a Mrs. Lovett from Sweeney Todd where like something that was an existing property that screamed for what she gave to it. I think that Hugh Jackman is fine in his role. I've talked about this. I don't think Russell Crowe was a great choice because I get that he embodies and he acts it well, but there are guys out there who can act it just as well as Russell Crowe could that could also hit the notes. And when you're talking about a musical, when you're talking about casting someone, that's a very important part. There's a reason why if you're doing a stage production, doesn't matter how much such and such looks like, you know, what you imagine this character to be, if they can't perform musically, they don't belong in a musical. But that was supposed to be talking about good things. Sorry. I think Anne Hathaway is another inspired choice. Someone who, on the opposite end of that Russell Crowe spectrum, you know, made this role very much her own, created something that transcended a lot of Fantine performances.
It was definitely one when they announced it that I was like, Anne Hathaway? Because I was like, I know she can sing, but I was like, all right.
And she ended up
being
it.
Like the best part,
Yeah, she kills it. She does a fantastic job with it.
Amanda Seyfried was also...
Yeah, also I think good, she, yeah. I think she does a very good job
She's
as well.
She's good in everything that she does. That's She's true. Just classically trained and got a beautiful voice.
Anyone who was plucked right from the current Broadway production that was then moved over into the... Like, those are, you know... I think that that was a very good choice on the studio, or if it was, you know, the director's choice to be like, you know what, I can't think of anyone who's a big name in Hollywood who could do Enjolras. Let's just grab an Enjolras and do it, you know? Yeah. And that, I think it worked out for the better in that movie. Mm-hmm. I think Gavroches are kind of a dime a dozen, honestly, when it comes to young.
If only they had done the Stranger Things kid again.
There's just stuff like that where you're like, they could have, you know, take it or leave it with those kind of with some of those characters. But I think you hit home runs with particularly Eponine and Enjolras.
Yeah.
Kill it. Fontaine, yeah. Like, I mean, Fontaine, she's separate because it's Anne Hathaway. I'm talking about just when you're plucking.
When
you're picking from people who have previously played the roles or, you know.
Yeah.
Those.
Have theatrical experience.
Yeah.
Those were good choices.
Yes.
To the stuff I don't like, the editing choices throughout the movie, there's a lot of stuff. And I think I mentioned this in the first episode. I think some of it is to accommodate for the live singing and to stitch together different takes of songs where, you know, maybe someone hit the note but broke character or something, you know. And what you end up with, because I think of just how they shot it with the live singing, you end up with some 180 breaks. You end up with some stuff that just is jarring and not great. And it's one of those things that I get that it was a bold decision. It's not one that I agree with. I think it works fine, but I think that you could achieve a smoother movie, a better looking movie by recording the singing or getting some of your set pieces just straight through and using, you know, the audio from a different scene or something.
They also could have done some scenes with the live singing. Like they could have done I Dream Dream, because that whole thing is just one shot on her face. So you could have done that, and then for like if they needed for a large like Look Down, perhaps could have not necessarily been.
Yeah, Look Down didn't need. At the end of the day, doesn't need to be
like,
because it's going through the, you know, it's all the townspeople. You could just get it, you know, you could get your different shots that you need, and they do a little bit of that, especially in those bigger scenes where you're going between lots of different characters. Yeah. Like at the end of the day, one day more, it's still. And I think there are scenes where it does work. I think, like you said, I Dreamed a Dream is one where it works. I think Master of the House particularly kind of works with the live singing where the camera feels kinetic. And
so also, it's got some great parts where he can just kind of drop out of the singing and do a bit of dialogue and go back in. It feels very natural and organic.
Yeah, all the stuff at the ABC Cafe in Red and Black, that feels... Because anywhere where it's a... enclosed space maybe with the live singing feels like it works in
anything
the camera.
With a lot of movement or like outdoors.
Yeah. Other things I wasn't like keen on, the production design to me, while grand, isn't, I don't feel like we talked about it, and these were my top, you know, our other two movies were my top like two for production design, or my top three. There are some really fun choices made, but it does play it pretty safe for a lot of stuff other than like the grandiose of like pulling a ship in. But for the most part, it stays pretty true to the period. It stays, which aren't marks against it as much as they are just fine. They're pretty neutral, which is why it ended up on my last in that episode, was it, I felt like it was very safe. And that's where I think I end up with on this film. I feel like there's a lot of chances that are taken that aren't always, that aren't swings and misses, but there are chances taken that work out some of the time, and then other places where they play it so safe that it feels like they aren't taking risks. And so what that does for me is it creates an uneven film for me, at least in general.
I don't know. I mean, I would almost argue that it, to a point, doesn't need to take too many risks. I think if it consistently delivers on an adaptation of what it's doing effectively, then that in and of itself is an excellent product kind of thing. Where it's like, they don't need to do something bold and different with Les Mis because it hadn't really been done before. By doing it at a high enough quality, then that itself is the achievement.
And I'm not saying you can make a movie, I think, where you make all the safe choices and do it really well. And make something that's good. The reason that I take points off for this is because there are places where they don't take risks, and the places that they do take risks don't always work for me. You know, live singing, like I've already said, you know, while I would say the majority of the casting is actually pretty good for this movie, there's still some, you know, let's take a chance on Russell Crowe because he's such a great actor, you know, doesn't work out. You know, there's just, there are risks that are taken and that don't always pan out for me, which is, I'm not asking for every movie to be risky. I don't think musicals require a lot of risk.
Yeah.
It's
minimal, especially with all three of these that are adapting existing Broadway properties. I don't think it requires risk. What I don't like to see is what, to me, like I say, it makes it feel uneven to me. It doesn't have to feel uneven to you. It's just where I land on it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else that I'm like want to say my piece about beforehand. It's good. I don't want people to think that I dislike this movie. I think it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where I stand on it is if someone's going to ever bring up like, hey, you want to watch Les Mis, the 2012 version, I will consistently say absolutely yes. And that's a hard thing to say with a story that's as
and a nearly three-hour movie.
Long, emotionally draining, but I will go... I will say yes every single time, and that's not something that I normally do with movies that are that draining. But yeah, I'm a big fan of this adaptation. It always, you know, it brings me a lot of, you know, joy and catharsis and sadness and all the emotional good stuff. But you know, a lot of the technical things, I'm not going in always looking at it. It is an achievement, but it stands apart for me for the performances. Predominantly, which is why I don't have as much of, you know, a technical struggle looking at the at all the Dutch angles or, you know, some of the editing things or, you know, the ship being pulled in at the beginning does not, you know, bother me because I know what they're trying to go for.
Oh, and I'm not saying it bothers me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just an example of not all of the production design is bland or like...
Right, right.
Not grand. You know, there are choices that are made was my clarification there.
All right, Phoenix... Take it away. Do you have something? Oh, wait. You already spoke.
Yeah, I went. It's time for Robbie to talk about Music Man.
I was just going to quickly say my last thing about Les Mis, which is that...
Oh, sure.
My way of putting it is that it feels uneven with the choices that they make and then with some outright mistakes and lapses in quality filmmaking. That's why I just can't feel one... You know, I can never feel 100 about this film, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. What's next?
Music Man.
I guess you set me up for it.
Yeah, take it away.
You want me to talk about this movie?
We have 20 minutes.
So. Okay, yes. The Music Man is a fantastic film in every sense of the word. It creates a world that I want to live in a lot of times. The costume design is great. Robert Preston is the Music Man. He embodies the film. He, you know... Whether or not you like the, you know, way that if he gets his comeuppance or not. Although the people that are listening don't know that Phoenix and I argued about that for one.
Yeah, that was part of the whether or not deleted
you,
cut.
Yeah, whether or not you think that he gets what he deserves or not, his performance, his just the essence that he brings to this movie puts a smile to my face. As well as the performances all around in this. It's just a fun film. I will say that it has some pacing issues, perhaps, and that there are some songs that don't shine as much as the really bright marks that are in the rest of this movie. But I just enjoy... This world feels lived in to me, despite also being a set, clearly. Everyone feels believably in this town and even in its absurdities, you know? I think the story is very, you know, anyone is enjoyable for anyone ages, you know, 5 to 505, you know, Methuselah out here watching. I don't know. Sure. I think immortal beings
probably enjoy it.
It's a timeless film.
It is timeless. And
accessible.
I don't want to say 5 to 55 and then exclude people over the age.
Once you hit 56, 505. Pretty safe with that one.
But it's a fun time. The music is full all of these are actually full of earworm stuff that can get stuck in your head.
They made it this far because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dance sequences that are great. You know, egads. It's a good movie.
Okay. So
drop your criticisms below.
So where I'm with at the Music Man to me has a number of very, very strong moments. However, when strung together as a complete product, I think it ultimately has some pretty glaring flaws. I think it 100% has a pacing issue. I think it has an egregious pacing issue. That movie does not need to be 2.5 hours long. There are a number of songs that can just be removed from the middle altogether. It's got points where it's like, this was entirely unnecessary, and it's like, the song isn't even that good, so does it even need to be in here, kind of thing. On top of that, I mean, I love Robert Preston's performance. That really stands out to me. I love the music itself. Like, I love the music, and like, the songs are very catchy, easy to sing along to. I wish the choreography was a little more there, especially comparing to like musicals of that era and time, where choreography was like everything. And this movie, I think, is kind of lacking in it a little bit. There's certainly numbers where it stands out, but on the whole, there's a lot of either just singing while they're kind of walking around, or not really that much coordinated choreography, as you would have in another like big Hollywood musical at the time. I find this one to be somewhat similar to
Although I will say with that, this is not, I mean, when you're talking about musicals in general, this is not a dance show. Like this.
Yeah, no, it's not. But it still, to an extent, I think it is a detriment because you don't have that momentum of the, like, the motion on screen of like feeling like you're moving and going ahead and that kind of thing. And that's really where I think it is ultimately at its detriment, is that it is, and frankly, I think in the middle, kind of boring. You don't, like, nothing's really happening, and you know that this thing's ultimately where it's going to end, but that takes so long to get there. And I have a similar critique to this that Robbie has with Les Mis, in that I think the production design is suitable, but in this, I mean, beyond the like creation of the town itself, it is for the most part, I think, fairly safe. The costumes really stand out. But the sets, I'm like, once you see the town, there's not really anything new or exciting beyond it or necessarily in it, other than just establishing like the small town feel. So I think they could have done maybe more with like interiors and things like that. But it's ultimately all just very
kind of normal. The
library
is good.
Library is cool. And that one's more of a nitpick than like a glaring like flaw or anything. But yeah, for me, it's the performances are really good, in particularly, you know, Robert Preston. Like we said, his voice is like velvet. And the music is key in this movie. Like, the music is king. And there are numbers like
the music is man.
Yes. I love a number of like a whole lot of the actual musical numbers. But on the whole, yeah, I find this movie to be kind of egregiously paced. and certainly boring in some parts.
Okay. I'll start with the positives. A lot of y'all, like, you both have like similar points that I'm going to make. So I'll just kind of run through it. But, with the positives, I'll get with like, I love, like you said, the music in this movie is really good. And a lot of the performance, a lot of the singing ability in this movie is really good. Really top notch stuff. I also think that Robert Preston in particular is really like his acting ability in this, and the way he performs.
He's
this
so
character.
Charismatic.
Yeah, he's almost synonymous to the act, to the character itself. Like he does it extremely, extremely well.
Matthew Broderick Holmst.
Matthew who?
Oh, we talked about this last night. Hugh Jackman's about to go play him in a revival on Broadway.
Yeah,
which just adds more Jackman to this already
Jackman-heavy
season.
I would be interested to see it. I'm sure he'll do a great job, and I welcome his interpretation.
Yeah, I agree.
Another person oozing charisma.
I think I agree with both of your points about the pacing, that there's a pacing problem in this movie. It really kind of drags at times. I also think part of it is due to the story, and it kind of goes into sort of what my problems with the lady character category, where like I think the story is a bit flawed, kind of both with his, with the character of Harold Hill, and then also with, I think the story could be touched up a bit where it doesn't maybe drag in the middle, like it could add more kind of action or more kind of like stuff going on in the middle that doesn't like just bide time until the end. But besides that, you know, I'm not upset with like the choreography in this movie. I think like while it is like not as showy, I think it's like still there's still like some deceptive like choreography in this. Like a lot of it is like blocking movement and like using using the location around itself that is like, you know, there's choreography in that for sure. Oh, and then I also think
there's certainly strengths.
It's not like full on dance numbers, but I think it's like there's a lot of choreography and like just how they move around and where they go. So I'm not too upset with that. I also think
I would say any scene where Harold Hill is like
commanding the
to the people, and like there's, you know, the townspeople and you move them back and he moves them forward and he moves them up the bleachers and
You know, definitely.
And those are choreographed, I guess, but those aren't, it's not Gene Kelly, you know.
Yeah. Well, the benefit about a Gene Kelly musical though is you're working with groups and sets of like 5 to 6 people and you're having to accommodate, you know, 60, 70 more plus extras trying to do something that's all kind of in unison. So I get what you're saying with it not being, it's not as egregious to me.
Yeah, and I think especially in comparison, like something like Les Mis, for example, like it almost has potentially more choreography because like something like Les Mis, they just kind of like sing to the camera or talk. So that's what one of the I think polarizing things about going back to Les Mis for a second that like some people didn't like is that because of all the close-ups, there wasn't any room to like move or dance or something.
It is weird to see One Day More without like the triangle forming everyone.
Yeah, which also turned people away, but not me, I guess. So I don't mind the choreography in this. I just have problems with the pacing and the story for the most part. The music's really good. The performances are really good. And that's all my main notes about it.
I mean, the music in The Music Man, nuance galore, it's a world in and of itself. Like, I think half of the reason why I've come around to this musical so much is our score episode and just listening to it and listening to it. Another reason why I just always like the score episodes. But, you know, there's a richness, there's complexity and, you know, what the direction is achieving with the human voice. And I'm constantly astounded each time re-listening to it. It's gotten a place on my the entire album's got a place on my winter 2019 Spotify playlist, so massive achievement there. Pacing for me though is very I take a Bohemian Rhapsody approach on this one. I love listening to the music so much that I think I'd rather just listen to the album than maybe catch the entire movie. Although there are isolated segments that I really enjoy, Buddy Hackett, doing his thing, shout out Scuttle, Little Mermaid, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love watching, you know, that actualized on screen and some of my favorite numbers, but, the in-between parts are kind of where I get lost, with the momentum of it. But
I can't believe that the Little Mermaid never had an item called a Shapoopy.
I think it would have been great. It was
this here is a Shapoopy.
Dinglehopper, who, but yeah.
Dingle Hooper?
All right. Hairspray.
Love this movie. It's fantastic.
I love this movie, too.
Great movie.
This might be a... While I said there was inspired casting choices in Les Mis, this might have more inspired casting choices.
Yeah, this has a lot of good...
I love the cast of this movie. Yeah. I love the music in this movie. Yeah. The story is very good. I've talked for on and on during the season about I love how they made this world their own while still having elements of John Waters in there. I love this movie. I don't really have anything bad to say about it, which is really fun.
And
I will let other people go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of right there with you in that, like, I think this is a wonderful adaptation to the musical itself, which is already a pretty good adaptation of the movie. The songs are like incredibly catchy and incredibly fun. And also, we said it in the music episode, but with like good with the times, I agree that the casting is incredible. We haven't really talked about her much, so I'm just going to bring her up now. Amanda Bynes is also really good in this.
Yes. Yeah. She kills it.
Yeah. I know we talked more about like, Zac Efron and Nikki Blonsky. And,
Michelle Pfeiffer is also amazing.
Michelle Pfeiffer is really good. Amanda Bynes is really good in this. Like, the casting, it really...
James Marsden also is really,
really
good.
Really does nail it. And I think
Christopher Walken and John Travolta together is a great pairing.
A solid matching, really comedic group together. Yep. And
there's nobody who drops the ball at all in this.
Jerry Stiller is in it.
Vocally, yeah. No, I am searching and I don't see anybody.
And it's pretty well paced. Like, I'm sure there's like the few songs that they do cut from the movie, I think actually maybe go to its benefit because it doesn't destroy any momentum into the flow of the plot in itself. And I think that helps a lot to the movie. The production design's really good. The character design is really, really good. Like the costumes and the hair, especially.
Yeah, it's gotta be.
It has to be. I don't know if I have many cons about it either. Maybe only like Nikki Blonsky's acting when she's not singing would be my only con. But that's more getting into, I guess, nitpicks of things. You know, she's not like a fully fully talented actress. I mean, I don't want to judge her. Maybe she is, but like in this one, I think she's
coming into her own
a little young.
Skill.
Yeah. So
I would, where I landed
so
on
I would
it,
kind of maybe say that
with her acting, and I maybe give her some slack because it is her first feature film and she's in a lead position, you know,
right.
She still has a very great sense of who the character is and how that character lives in that world.
She really captures it.
She does a very good job of capturing it. And so while there isn't a lot of nuance to it, for someone whose experience in acting had been high school theater, she does a beyond high school theater performance.
Yeah.
There's
certainly.
Absolutely.
She goes beyond what you might expect for someone cast from an open casting call. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. She kills it. I mean, in my idealization of Tracy Turnblad, I think for the rest of my life will probably be her.
Yeah.
Because that was my first exposure to Hairspray as well. Great sleepover party movie if you're a 2007 9-year-old girl.
Actually,
but
I made my mom drive me to the theater to watch it.
You said 2014 17-year-old boy sleepover.
Yes.
You said that really weird.
2019 23-year-old man, right?
Mama, I'm a big girl.
But I mean, I think if I'm really searching for critiques for this movie, I can understand the approach that, you know, we talked a little bit about score being, because of it's so of its time, so of the 1960s moment, and the, you know, instrumentation is very borrowed from that time, that there, you know, you might be able to see some homogenization with some of the pieces. And I mean, I don't know. I can see it maybe being there with orchestration, but I love the music and the lyrics so much that I think each song really stands apart.
I think that disappears when you watch the movie. I think when you listen to it, you hear it.
I agree.
But they differentiate the numbers enough in the film that it doesn't feel like that when you're watching it.
With the visual aid,
it all just feels kind of consistently like within this world.
That's really all I had as far as, you know, what could a possible critique be.
No.
No.
I love this movie.
I think we should go ahead and take our break.
All right.
See you guys soon. Thanks for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. Before we get back into the action, I just wanted to tell you about a show we have here on the 5208 Media Network called Tap Heads. That's right, Tap Heads is a show hosted by yours truly, Robbie DeShazer, along with Carter Spilliards from Film Fracas and our good friend Wendy Lopez. We get together every other week and we drink a whole bunch of beers and talk about what we like about them, what we don't like about them, what we're learning about beers. There's just so much fun to be had. We've tried a whole bunch of different breweries, a whole bunch of different types of styles of beers. We're just having a lot of fun doing this, and I think that you guys should go check it out. So right after you listen to the second half of this episode, head on over to anchor.fm/tapheads and go listen to our most recent episode. We had a lot of fun making it, and we hope you guys have a lot of fun listening to it. All right, get back to the action. What's up? Phoenix has to go. Phoenix, what are your top three?
Yeah, sorry, I've got to run to work. But here are my top three real quick, guys, just so everyone will know. My number one is Hairspray. My number two is Music Man, which makes, unfortunately, Les Mis my number three. I feel like the earlier stuff I said justified why. Like Hairspray, I didn't really have much problems with. My break tie between Music Man and Les Mis, I think Music Man is just more complete overall. And while I struggle with the story... I think Les Mis just has a little bit two more flaws here and there that it kind of just dropped to number three. I'm going to go ahead and drop my recommendation real quick. Follow me on Twitter at Bombas Phoenix. I'm going to recommend today Under the Skin, directed by Jonathan Glazer. Another film I just recently rewatched, or not rewatched, watched for the first time actually. And really, really great. Really great sci-fi movie. I know why everyone always talks about it now. Scarlett Johansson's really good. The direction's really interesting. It's really quiet and soft. It's like a very quiet, slow film, but it really, like, that atmosphere really captures you into that movie. So
we stand atmospheric dramas.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's good. It's a really good movie. All right. Yeah. See y'all, guys.
Bye. Everyone, let me know bye to Phoenix in your car right now.
Bye. I guess text me what wins.
Yeah, we will. We will. Bye. Okay.
He hopes to tweet things that you like.
He does. He does hope to tweet things that you like.
Thank you.
I hope that got picked up. Phoenix said thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Need that ambient noise of... Okay, he's taking forever to lock the door. Okay. Phoenix is gone.
Who wants to go now? So we have one vote for Hairspray.
Goodbye, Phoenix.
All right.
Goodbye, Phoenix.
Here's the rundown. Goodbye, I've got Hairspray as my number one. I have Les Mis as my number two. I have Music Man, sadly, as my number three. But it got all the way to top three, so I'm not that sad about it.
Yeah.
I'm not sad about it at all. It's a great movie with a great score.
You're refusing to make eye contact with me, which is weird.
I just... All right, Robbie.
She's like, you shouldn't feel bad about it. It made it all the way to number...
It made it all the way there.
It made it to the last episode.
They did it, and it's fine.
It's okay. Yes. It's okay. You know what? When I do the averages on all of this, my list makes sense. It doesn't make sense to my heart, but...
Hort.
Is Hort your number one, Les Mis?
No.
I'm sorry. Is that where we're going with this?
No. My number one, I have the exact same ranking as Phoenix. My number one is Hairspray. I think it's a delightful movie. I would spend many, many an afternoon watching it, living it. Yeah, I would. I just want to be a part of that world.
Living it as Michelle Pfeiffer or as James Marsden or as Link or as somebody else.
I am Link. No, I love that movie.
It's wonderful.
I have a very hard time finding anything I don't like about that movie. Just a very fun experience. I think you put it really well, Shannon, when you said that like it's a good sleepover movie, which I mean. Anything
it's not. It is actually a good credit to its name. Yeah. Any movie that can
anything
be endlessly rewatched.
Endlessly rewatched or put on with any group of people. Like it's weird to say like it's a good mixed company like movie, but like it's you know
it is.
Anyone can enjoy it. I think you can
still get something out of it new every single
time. That's why I love it. It's a crowd pleaser that still has elements to it that make it a fantastic movie. The production design, like I said, is great. The heart of John Waters is in it, which making his most approachable film even more approachable is incredible. And I think it's a great jumping off point for anyone who wants to get into the crazy world that is John Waters' filmography. Watch the musical, start dipping your toes into the various incarnations of Hairspray. And then, you know, before you know it, you're ready for Pink Flamingos.
Ooh. All right.
Other than that, I mean, my number two is The Music Man, which, like I said, when you do the averages, it ended up being like my number two or three film for most of the episodes this season. I think that the flaws in it are evident. I think I can't say that it's a perfect film. I love this film to death. I will rewatch it anytime anybody wants to. Robert Preston is fantastic. He is made for this role, and that role is what makes this film. Everyone else is very well cast. Ronnie Howard is a treasure in all of his forms, director or actor. And when it comes down to it, I mean, I think it checks all the boxes for me. It's a competently made film, and while it has its flaws, I think that it overcomes them in a lot of ways with strength in all of its other areas. And then, I mean, I don't think I have to add to my Les Mis notes. I think I, you know, got it all out there at the end. I will say what Shannon said, which is that it got here to the end. Like it, to me, that makes sense. It found its place here. I think that all of these films are incredibly rewatchable and, you know, absolutely hit their marks, to use a theater term. So, yeah, that's my ranking. Just to go over it once again, number one, Hairspray. Number two, The Music Man. Number three, Les Miserables.
And now the moment you've all been waiting for.
I just, so just to be clear to everyone else, though, that does mean that Hairspray is our winner for this season, regardless of what Carter says.
Regardless of what I say.
This is deciding the two and three spots. This is our...
Right.
So, contrary to popular belief, my number one is also Hairspray.
It's delightful!
Yes!
Hairspray. Congratulations, Hairspray!
Ooh, but and that means... Ooh.
Let me try to explain it so you all don't think I'm a shill.
If you do it, do you have the same ranking as Shannon?
I do.
So that just means everything else is tied for not winning.
Right.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
So like Phoenix and I just have the reverse of.
Yeah.
So Hairspray is, I think, firing on all cylinders when it comes to a musical. It is the complete package. It is.
Have we had a unanimous win ever? Was Hereditary last season?
Yeah, I think Hereditary was unanimous.
But. It's the complete package. It's got everything, the characters, the design, the music, the choreography, the performance. It's just all there. And while I like Les Mis more probably as a drama, I think when it comes to being a musical, this is kind of a perfect specimen to be like, if you need like a near perfect musical that's, you know, not boring, or it's not too much here or there. Really well balanced, solid cast, everything. You pick this up and you're like, well, go watch this because it's amazing. So, it's my number one, and Les Mis is my number two, and Music Man is my number three. I like all these movies.
Yeah.
I really,
they're all good.
I do like all these movies.
Yeah.
I do.
All of these movies deserve to be here. Hairspray clearly deserves to be the winner. Mm-hmm. You know, it is weird because I came into this list going, the fight is between Les Mis and The Music Man, kind of. Just all, you know, I feel like at least all season it's been you and me championing these two movies individually.
A little bit, yeah.
And behold.
When we made this list, I was like, finalists are going to be Les Mis and Hairspray.
You picked that?
That was my guess when we started the season.
You weren't wrong.
Yeah. I was like, I feel like regardless of what we do, I was like, I know I'm going to fight really hard for Les Mis. And because I know you didn't like it. And then with Hairspray, I was looking at the list and I was like, this is probably the best all-around musical we have here.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
It's
so, so good.
So maybe West Side Story. West Side Story was also up there.
Yeah, yep. West Side Story is good. I mean, it's wonderfully made. I have my qualms with it, but I mean. Yeah.
But yeah, that's that on that. Yeah.
Always nice when things are unanimous.
We've got time, and we're not doing like a true bonus episode for this. We're only 8 minutes in.
That's true.
Do you guys have any thoughts on the season as a whole?
I'm
glad we finally got to do musicals. I've really been looking forward to doing a musical season.
Yeah.
I do feel a little bad for Brett because he left and then
we did
horror movies and musicals, which are two things he loves.
I know.
Which is very
That's
sad.
Not our fault.
That's true. Definitely true. If Brett ever wants to come back,
we can
redo all of it, but just Chicago, and then you can, determine.
And Mamma Mia.
And Mamma Mia.
I do kind of wish, this is a little inside baseball, but. We talked about doing Mamma Mia instead of The Greatest Showman when we were making our list.
Yeah.
Greatest Showman certainly did well.
It did.
But I almost
got
like,
to the second to last episode.
Yeah, I almost wish that we had talked about Mamma Mia.
So, I still stand by the omission of jukebox musicals.
Yeah. But it is its own kind of musical in its own right. It just would have been difficult when we were talking about the music itself because.
Yeah.
It would have definitely been more on the onus of like the performance of it than.
Yeah.
You make a fair
the actual music
that.
Itself.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I think when we were choosing films, we just weren't sure how we were going to.
Yeah.
How
respond
much we were
them.
Going to yeah do but, with mm-hmm. music in each episode mm-hmm. and what, you know. Mm-hmm. And we ended up pushing most of our music notes to score. Yeah. So.
And I also wish we could have talked about Singing in the Rain, but we'd already done
We've
that.
Already done that
yeah,
movie.
And I don't know. I would have been interested to see how far it would have gotten just because I think, I mean, the main thing to its detriment is story.
It's not really about anything.
Exactly, but it's so damn it's just good.
So entertaining.
Yeah. And I mean, endlessly well performed, choreographed, sung, written. You know, it is amazing. Yeah. I don't know. I would have liked to see Chicago. Honestly, I do love Chicago. And I think it does.
Chicago's pretty good.
It's one of my favorite musicals or one of my favorite film musicals, let me be specific, film musicals, because I don't know original Chicago as well, or the revival in the 90s as well, but, you know, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Renee Zellweger, the guy who used to be married to Idina Menzel.
I also really like the Producers movie. It's not the strongest movie musical. I mean, the Producers is my favorite musical just outright. And I really like the movie version, not the original Producers film, but the musical movie, like the movie based on the musical, Matthew Broderick and Nathan Lane. I think they kind of played it safe because it's an R-rated musical that they made into a PG-13 movie. They cut out songs and changed lyrics. And I think if they had done true, like stayed true to form, because it's already, I mean, that movie's nearly clocks in at 3 hours and they still cut out one or two songs. And I'm like, at that point, put in the songs, make it, you know, like, do the whole thing authentically.
If you're going to be that long.
If you're gonna do it and you're going to swing for the fences with the Producers. And if I recall, it did okay, funny, like, the box office. But I would have almost rather it just been more authentic to the musical.
And sat a few more minutes.
Which I do love that, because Broderick and Nathan Lane were doing it on Broadway. And then they just plop them in.
And they do a very good job in those roles.
Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. No, they're fantastic. And Uma Thurman's okay. I maybe would have gone with someone different. Will Ferrell is entertaining, though.
Yes.
In it, too. So.
Yeah. I think the other hang-up I have with, like, or not hang-up, but something that I think about is I think it would be cool to do, like, talking about recordings of actual theatrical stagings, like, you know, 25th anniversary of Phantom of the Opera. I'm thinking of, I mean, you could definitely do a live Les Mis. You could do a live Newsies.
Hamilton.
I'm Hamiltoned out for the next decade, but get back to
it's
me.
It's all about In the Heights again.
In the Heights is
in
back.
In the Heights.
Just in time for that to die down, for the Hamilton movie to come out in like 5 years.
The world just needs more Lin-Manuel Miranda.
It's really, I think, just... I think it's just whenever Lin-Manuel Miranda needs more money.
Yeah.
Did he already spend his Mary Poppins Returns check?
Yeah, because Disney's got... I mean, he's in their pocket, but I don't know. Who knows? But last 5 years, forever one of my favorite musicals, which I think exists really well as a movie.
You know.
But...
In 20 years, when... we're still doing this podcast, it's still a viable medium, of course.
Yep.
You know, we can finally do the Merrily We Roll Along movie.
Yes, with
with Richard Linklater.
Yep. There we go.
Maybe he'll come on. He'll be an old man.
I'm hoping he's not dead before that movie.
He's not gonna die. Everyone, God. So I full disclosure, I worked for Rick over the summer.
Ooh, Rick.
When the film was announced. And I can't tell you how upset he was around the office with people like being like, is he going to die before it's over? And he's like, y'all, I'm in good health. I don't want to be dead in 20 years.
Damn.
Sorry, I think it's
like, can you imagine how it feels when everyone, like everyone in the media is like, hope he doesn't die.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's because he's he's shy and doesn't talk to the media. So the media just assumes that
I was like, it's... But anyone, I feel like anyone would have that. It's a very natural reaction if everyone's like, yeah, hope you don't die. It's like, I don't want to die either.
Yeah.
How old is Rick?
50 something.
He's 59.
Okay.
It's a legitimate concern.
Well, I mean, when you're pressing 79, 80, but I mean, you know.
I mean, Clint Eastwood's like 90.
That man's still surviving off of just still, like rage and grit.
His blood is actually donated dollars from the Republican.
Agnes Varda was still making movies up until she was.
That, you know, that's a good
true.
Point.
98.
Yep, she was old.
So I mean, not to say that Richard Linklater will die during the production.
We do not want him.
I also just think that any 20-year production is a
bold.
There's certainly risks. I would be more worried for the actors.
Yeah.
Getting in some kind of accident or you know.
Being young.
Being young, yeah, because they're all very young right now. So, anyway.
Cool, cool.
That about wraps up.
There's just a spike from where you hit the table.
Sorry about that. It's okay. It's a beat.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You can
this is Film Fracas.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at CA Spilliards, like spill something you already know. I'm sorry this episode was a little bit shorter. Like we said, we were under kind of a time crunch, and then we've got some bonus episodes coming out over the next few weeks for Christmas and the New Year, and they're going to be exciting.
Phoenix has responded to my text, which was Hairspray is the unanimous winner. He said, just as the scholars hypothesized long ago, you cannot stop the beat.
It's true. But you can
Phoenix is a happy boy.
You can find me on Twitter at CA Spillers, like spill something you already know. My recommendation this week, I have two. My first one is rewatch Star Wars.
It's your second one, The Rise of Skywalker, just pre-recommendation.
Yeah. So, no, it's because, I mean, this will come out the day Rise of Skywalker comes out, right?
Yeah, it'll come out Friday.
So
it'll have been out for a couple hours.
If you haven't already, make sure you watch Star Wars in preparation for Rise of Skywalker. It's the end of the Skywalker saga. I'm doing arguably overkill, but it's going to be a fun time. My actual recommendation this week, though, is Jumanji The Next Level. Came out last week, or last week for you listeners. It's as entertaining as the first Jumanji. So if you liked Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle, you will like this one because it is almost like, if I were to put them in my like side to side, they are, I think, exactly as entertaining, which is good. It's remarkably consistent, especially for a sequel, because a lot of times comedy sequels like that are usually not as good. And this one is exactly as good, and they're like, it's neither better or worse. So, if they make a third one and it's also just as good, I mean, the argument could be made for
trilogy,
very consistent. Yeah, one of the most consistently entertaining trilogies. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Jumanji: The Next Level. Bad title, but movie's good.
I don't think it's that bad of a
title. It's fine.
It's actually better than Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah, it was also not great.
Is it already? I guess it's not. It's really a spiritual successor, not a.
To the original Jumanji?
Yeah, it's not really. Yeah, you can't call that a trilogy.
No, the original Jumanji is, if anything, now just like a prequel, and these are spinoffs. I don't know.
I guess so. Who knows? You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Robbie DeShazer, at Robbie_DeShazer on Instagram. I like to post stuff there. My recommendation. What do I want to recommend? Actually, yeah, I'll recommend it because I just rewatched it not too long ago. 2016's Big Hero 6.
It's a good movie.
It is a very good movie. Maggie had never seen it.
I feel like it's in like a not. It's not talked about enough.
It isn't. It isn't. I don't know what it was that it got overshadowed by. Was that a Star Wars year?
That was what, it was Rogue 2015, One.
It was right, it was a Rogue One year, right?
What was the Pixar movie that year?
That wasn't, was that Coco?
Jurassic World. I know it came out right about the same.
Yeah.
Hold up, it came out before because I remember watching it.
But
Big Hero 6 was the like the Frozen slot that year.
Okay,
wasn't it?
Okay, so it would have been.
Yeah, it was a November 7th. I'm doing a Pixar 2016.
Was that? It was a good dinosaur.
I don't remember. Y'all, I genuinely don't remember.
I don't either.
Wait, yeah, Big Hero 6 is...
20...
No, they didn't... Finding Dory was their June movie that year.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, was Big Hero 6 2016, or am I wrong?
I think Big Hero 6 was... Wait, hold up. We can find this out.
Big Hero 6...
Big Hero 6...
Oh, no, it was 2014.
Yeah,
what am I talking
about?
There
we go.
I was going to say, I thought it was earlier.
A smidge earlier.
So then, going to the list of Pixar films... There wasn't a Pixar film that year.
So they skipped it.
They skipped that year. Because then they did Inside Out and The Good Dinosaur, both in 2015.
Oh, yeah. Because The Good Dinosaur was supposed to come out in 2014.
And then
it got, changed and rewritten and delayed.
And then we got Big Hero 6.
Yeah, Big Hero 6 is great. It didn't have any competition. I don't know why.
I don't know why we're talking about it.
It's a great movie.
Well, it was a lot of like... And it was also like the first Marvel and like Disney animation...
Yeah.
Collaboration.
Yeah.
But Baymax is great. Scott Adsit does a fantastic job voicing Baymax.
Baymax is fantastic.
They have a Baymax you can meet in Epcot mm-hmm. right now.
The villain
is so cute. He is like, it's like kind of like the, I hate to say it, like the sumo, like, Halloween costumes where it's got the like,
inflatable,
it's inflatable and it's got a fan in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, he doesn't really say anything, but he walks around just like,
around
he
waddles.
I love the, I love the villain. He's very kind of menacing in the design.
Oh, yeah.
Very good.
The look and feel of that movie is great, man. Yeah. I don't feel like it's got a look that's not quite the rest of the Disney animation catalog.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
Very much its own. Yeah. And a fantastic voice cast to go along. So, also, the show that follows it is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
The Big Hero 6 show for Disney mm-hmm. Channel is mm-hmm. on Disney Plus.
Fantastic in the movie.
Yeah.
Didn't realize it got its own show. It definitely deserves a revisit mm-hmm. because I don't think I've seen it since 2014, 2015. Mm-hmm.
It's got a Fall Out Boy song in it, Immortals.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
Not in the slightest. Hey guys, you can find me on Letterboxd at Zed's Dead 5. Have we already recommended 1917?
No.
I'm going to recommend it.
No, I don't think
Are you
so.
Sure, Carter?
I don't think I did.
Okay. Well, I'm recommending what is easily one of my top five favorite films of 2019. 1917, directed by Sam Mendes, is not at all what I thought would be one of my favorite films of this year. I've seen a war epic here and there. Nothing too, I'm not like wedded to the genre or anything, but I think what I love the most about 1917 is it feels so much more than the product of what's going on in the story. It's way more than a, World War I thing. It's about two people and, I guess three if you count one of those people's brothers. But, I mean, it's a feat of cinematography. I love the long take and the consistency of almost never cutting except, I guess, once in the middle. Spoiler alert. But it's gripping. It's harrowing. I don't cry in movies, and I was a mess watching it. So if you can get some tears, that automatically, ranks it up very high for me. But it's done very well, scripted minimally, and, that's to its benefit. But it's absolutely fantastic. And, even if you don't like the genre, do yourself a favor and go see it and have an opinion about it. But.
All right. Thank you for that recommendation. I'll definitely check it out. Other than that, Phoenix already did his recs and stuff, but follow him on Twitter at BombAssPhoenix. Follow us on Twitter at Film Fracas, or also on Instagram and Facebook, but we post there less frequently. Mm-hmm. So go follow everybody.
Support the show.
Support the show, yeah. There's a link if you go to anchor.fm/filmfracas.
Buy our merch.
Yeah.
Still technically there.
I haven't checked.
follow Tapheads.
Follow Tapheads,
Listen to Tapheads.
Listen to Tapheads. We need to record a new episode of that sometime soon. There should have been one that came out yesterday, if you're listening to this.
Yes.
On the day it drops. Other than that...
5208 Media, ? Or was that already said?
I mean, we are 5208 Media. Or we
I
are
didn't know if there
company.
Was a whole
there's,
thing associated with
there's it. There's a stinger at the end, at the beginning and end of the episodes.
Oh, good.
But
that's it.
We're going to have a couple of bonus episodes.
Yes.
And then we will officially be back later in January.
Yeah. We'll have just something to look forward to. We'll have a Christmas episode. We'll have our best of the decade. And we'll have our announcement of next season.
Yeah.
So
look forward to that. Enjoy your little breaks. We will enjoy ours.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Kwanzaa. Whatever.
Do it all.
Yeah. Do it all. All the good stuff.
Do it all.
Celebrate it all. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fracas. We know there are a lot of shows on the web, and we are so glad you took the time to listen to ours. Thanks to Carter Spilliards, Phoenix Arola, and Shannon Widener for helping to write and produce each episode. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating wherever it is you listen. It really does help get the word out about the show. You can follow the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Film Fracas. Once again, thanks for listening, and we can't wait for you to hear our next episode. Media.